Hey, hey, it's Lynn Stroy. A quick note. When you hear today's host, Roy Jakes, talk about the second part of this episode, that's a reference to next week's release. What originally intended to be one episode with two different conversations about the topic of God, people, and prayer is now two different episodes, part two releasing next week. There's just so much to digest in these deep theological dives. We opted for two separate doses. Here's part one of God, people, prayer, and mystery.
Just because I don't believe or agree doesn't mean I can't learn from you.
Why did you have to bring that up?
Okay, that one I'm super embarrassed about.
Do you like me?
Do I like you?
Yeah.
As an individual or
as a
podcast?
Yeah, just as a person.
No, I like you.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I don't have any interest in appearing to be stronger than I am.
I ain't bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. He gonna lead. You feel me?
How do we love people who see the world differently than we do?
What would it look like if we truly loved all of our neighbors? Could listening to their stories be the first step? This is Seacoast Church, and there's way more to talk about.
Hey guys, it's Roy Jakes subbing in for Joey today. Actually, I'm not sure this is a sub as much as it is maybe a permanent thing. We had to fire Joey. Just kidding. Looking forward to subbing for Joey today. You know, Joey and I go way back to T-ball on James Island. Many of you have heard us talk about this before, way back in the days as we were young kids on James Island. In fact, I think I must have tagged Joey hard one day or something. That explains some of his resentment to me. But Joey and I go way back, graduated James Island High School, class of 95. We've known each other for a long time. In fact, Joey was instrumental really in my journey here at Seacoast. When I had been away for a number of years, when I showed back up in Charleston in 2007 at the West Ashley campus, Joey was one of the first people I saw that day. And we hadn't seen each other since high school. And so it was great to reconnect, and we got together. And Joey really helped me get connected to West Campus and eventually led to me coming on staff. So he likes to think he gets credit for me here at Seacoast. And well, I guess he kind of does slightly. But no, Joey and I become great friends. In fact, one of the other things that you've heard Joey lie about over the years is that at one point in time or growing up that I actually bullied him. And actually, the funny part about this story is he's told it so many times that there's a lot of people around Seacoast that actually began to believe it. So if you ever hear Joey talk about me bullying him growing up, just know he's lying, as he always has, and it never was true. In fact, Joey bullies me way more than I bully him these days. Hey, I'm really excited to get to host today's episode because it's a perfect example of we, even here on staff, can hold different opinions, theologies, different ideas about things, and it's okay. We still get along. We still love each other. We still are united under the banner of who Jesus is and what he's called us to. And so on today's episode, you're going to hear a conversation from me, Joey, and Chip that honestly, we've probably had dozens of times. We've just never actually recorded it. And so today we decided to get in the studio and talk about an issue that that we just don't agree on. I won't speak for Joey nor Chip, but essentially what it boils down to is on the subject of prayer, Joey and I are a lot more comfortable, as you'll hear in this episode, on the side of just that there's some things that we just don't know. Joey and I are really perfectly comfortable saying we don't know and we can't control this side of heaven. Chip, on the other hand, his opinion and his view is that we as human beings really have a lot more control over this issue of prayer than most people get it credit for. You're going to hear in this conversation today those two different views. In part two of this episode, yes, there's two parts today, Chip and Joey gave me the boot and invited Jack Hoy, the father, or as we affectionately refer to him here at Seacoast, Jack the Greater, and Thomas J. Ord, one of the leading thinkers on a concept called open theism. Now, I personally don't know all that there is to open theism. I haven't looked deep into it, but I'll try to summarize it just briefly here. Open theism affirms basically two things. That number one, it supposes that if a man has free will, the future is unknowable, even to God. So for God to give someone free will, he'd have to be okay with foregoing knowledge of the future. He can't have both, is what an open theist would say. Secondly, open theists believe that God is not all-powerful. That's why bad things happen. He can't stop them all. He wants to, but given how God set this thing all up, he just can't. Now, even though I'm sure that may shock many of you that that line of thinking exists within the church, both Chip and Thomas are trying to do the same thing. Make sense of a world in which there is a good God who loves us all and that he is involved in and watching over a world that's full of the darkest of evils. This has been baffling the deepest of thinkers for thousands of years, and I doubt we're going to actually solve this today. So, Here's me, Joey, and Chip taking a deep dive on the existence of God and evil.
This is a serious question for you.
Okay.
Like, you've sat at this podcast table numerous times. There are times when you are loose and trippy, like you are right now.
Right.
And there are times when I can tell there's something in your head going on. Is that normal stress? I mean, because I know it's just human nature. Sometimes you're super loose and having fun, and then other times it's just kind of like life. But how would you describe it? Do you know what I'm even talking about?
No, I mean, it's great since it's very astute of you, but you're right. It just has to do with schedule. It's never what's happening in the room. It's never. Now, that's not entirely true. Like with Jack the Greater, believe it or not, I tend to want to be respectful and a little bit more careful. So it's not that I'm not loose, but there's some people that I pretty significantly disagree with on some issues, but I love them so much. I feel like I could tear them up in a debate on certain subjects. And I will not do it.
Jack the Lesser really holds back with Chip. I think for the same reason about his dad, Jack. I mean, I'm just like, come on, man. Tell us what you really think.
I felt the same thing. I was like, come on, dude. Spire a little bit. But, you know, I would have slam dunked him.
Well, I love this conversation because it's what we talk about naturally. So just to give a reference point, we kind of call it the art crew. Was it 2 or 3 years in a row, maybe
oh, my
three?
Goodness. Felt like four.
So the three of us, Roy, Chip, myself, and then Jeff Leinberger from West Campus, and then John Holm. But we would drive to the art conference together. We're talking 5 hours there and back. Yep.
Seven.
Yeah. So, I mean, these kind of conversations were just like a very normal thing.
What are you laughing at?
I'm just remembering something that you can't put on this podcast.
But before we do that.
That was just raw fun, man. That was, oh my gosh, it was awesome.
So, Roy, let me ask you a few questions.
Except for having to accommodate Joey at the beginning of the day. I mean, running us all over the countryside. Remember that?
Because
he had to pick his kid up and there was flooding downtown or something.
Oh, no. I got in it was a huge car accident.
Oh, is that
15
what it was?
Cars. And so I had listen to this, though. So Waylon is now going into middle school, but I was going up on the Cosgrove Bridge and it's like that feeling where you see and you know you're going to hit a car because there's nothing you can do. And so I hit a car hit me behind me, and then a car sideswiped me, knocked the rear view window off. And then when it all settled down, I mean, we were totally fine, but Waylon starts crying. And I was like, Waylon, are you okay? Everything's fine, right? And he told me that now the police are going to come and get you, and I don't know how to get home.
Oh, no.
Isn't that the sweetest thing? He was 4 years old, and he's thinking, they're going to take my dad, and I'm stuck on this bridge.
And then you had to get in the car and drive to Birmingham with us.
Right. Oh, that was a day, man.
I forgot about the car accident. I was just thinking of how inconsiderate you were.
You were being a little insensitive.
Yeah, probably.
All right, Roy, three quick questions. So thinking of these art guys.
Yes.
All right. When we're out and about during these conferences, who's likely going to take joking the farthest, borderline, if not full-fledged, inappropriate?
Oh, Chip Judd.
All right. Second question. Who's the most likely to skip out on speakers to chill in the lobby or go grab lunch early?
Mr. Chip Judd.
All right. Next question. Who's the most likely to express cynicism toward one or more of the guests? Speakers.
Chip Judd.
Dude, what's the relevance of that?
This podcast is about sharing personality. We're just trying to give people an inside look at Chip.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Hey, this is going to sound really morbid, maybe. I don't know. But as I get older...
Are you going to say we don't know how many more of these we have left with Chip or something?
No. But no, kind of like...
Well, sort of.
No, what I was going to say is, like, Chip is definitely... Chip is younger than my parents' generation, but he's still a fatherly figure for me. And as I get older... there are a few people in my life outside of family that I don't want to ever say goodbye to.
Yeah.
I know that sounds really morbid. I know we just went super, but like, I don't ever want to lose Chip. You know what I'm saying? And there's just people that are a good bit older than us. That's just going to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's gonna happen. He's a special one for sure. We joke a lot. We joke. Obviously that's just our relationship.
Oh yeah.
And that's and all three of us enjoy it. Mm-hmm. He's special for sure. We love you.
You know, on the funeral thing, or whatever. That's not exactly what you think about a funeral. You know, it's funny how when you get
older. I think he was just talking about you getting fired.
All right, when you get older.
I think losing Chip was more about you getting fired.
That's not what you're saying, right?
No, I'm
what?
Just.
You weren't. No. You know, you think about stuff like that. And it's funny because I think about people that I want to make sure are there. You know, it's almost like you think about, I don't know, what you want to say to them, or like you want something to happen in that service that lets them know that my journey would not have been the same if you hadn't been a part of it. Mm. And I do feel that way about you guys, but I don't know if that makes sense, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's face it, guys. It's a big deal that all of us are going to have to deal with at some point. I'm one of those people that doesn't mind thinking about that. I find it helps me to do that. I want to give thought to it.
Yeah.
Because I want it to be, obviously, I want it to honor and glorify God, but I want it to punctuate what an honor it's been.
I mean, I think about the brevity of life, and I mean, I'm in a good place with my mental health, so this isn't like a pessimistic thing.
Does he really believe that?
This went deep quick. What's the topic today?
Does he believe he's in a good place, Troy? Where did he get the idea he's in a good place?
But I find this kind of uncommon, but when I think about the brevity of life and my finiteness, it brings me comfort too. And it's not like, ooh, I can't wait to get out of here. And I find life very precious, but when I think about the magnitude of the universe and God who created it, and then just how many people have come and gone who were in our situation right now thinking, oh, life's going to live forever, and they've been gone for thousands of years. I mean, it just, I don't know, it brings me comfort.
I'm not sure I'm there with you guys on this one.
So I reached out to both of y'all and basically said, hey, let's tackle Chip's philosophy on prayer, which you and I, Roy, are very familiar with. I want to start off by just sharing personally that prayer has definitely always been a tough one for me. And growing up in for most of my childhood, Pentecostal churches, I'll never forget when my youth pastor, who I loved dearly, great guy, pastoring a church in West Ashley, but he dropped a bomb on the youth group. And I mean, it was probably 25, 30 kids. And he basically started talking about Job. And his big line was, God allows what you allow. So in other words, bad things aren't supposed to happen. And so if they do, it's on you. And I don't know if he regretted this, but there were kids crying. They're just like, I lost my dad. You trying to tell me that that's on me? Like, it's almost like he stepped on a landmine. Because, I mean, there were people, you know, I had just lost my grandfather who I was super close to. And I'm like, you know, I remember our whole family gathering around him, laying hands on him, praying for God to take away the cancer. And it's just like a super confusing thing. So.
And you're saying the connotation was because
bad things are not supposed to happen to God's people. So if they do, it's on us, not God.
Because of prayer?
Because of lack of.
Lack of prayer.
Lack of prayer, lack of faith.
Lack of something. Yeah.
Lack of something.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, so fast forward, oh gosh, about 22 years. So this is back in 2017. I'm almost positive that's the year. And a sweet, sweet guy got in a motorcycle accident. James Island campus, he was working with our students, he was on our worship team, and we were in that hospital for about a week. You know, he had been an integral part of a small group, and so his peeps were there, his parents were there, and I mean, we were praying and believing and praying without ceasing. And when he died, and I think I remember telling you this, Roy, I mean, here I am as a pastor, and I threw in the towel as far as any sort of structure I have to my faith in prayer. Not saying I don't believe in prayer anymore, but I am okay with saying I have no idea how it works. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if it works. Mm-hmm. And so what I have been able to camp out on, and I hope that I can maybe grow beyond this, but it has been a pretty helpful thing in this season is I do strongly believe that prayer is super beneficial for my relationship with God. That's the one thing that I can say. Prayer works when it comes to just being in communion with the Father. But you had a similar situation, I think, more recent. And I remember you, would you consider that a faith crisis? Like you were basically just at wit's end. Like, I have no idea what I think of prayer anymore. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I would just, very similar. What you're describing is spot on with where I'm at in prayer and where prayer's gotten for me. I think I was thinking in preparation for today, I was thinking of all the things that I have questions about. Like, it's not a long list. Like, I don't have a huge list of things like, oh, when I get to heaven, that's one thing I'm going to ask. Oh, I can't wait. But of all the things that I think it's this issue of prayer, because, and I think I can confidently say this, of all the things in my life that I can confidently say, I've trusted the Lord in this area. And when I've done it, when I've done things the Lord's way, whether it be with my finances, relationships, in most areas of my life, I can say it works. When I do things God's way, it works. The one area that doesn't, there's just not a formula to it, is this issue of prayer. There's not a formula where we can say, when we do it this way, it works, because we've all done it that way and it hasn't worked. There appears to be no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do, I want to speak on behalf of Chip. And one thing that I will say for him is, even though he has pretty concrete views on this, even though I'm going to speak on how this can affect people, he never carries his beliefs in a way that would make people feel bad.
No.
In other words, and I think he acknowledges there has to be some mystery involved. But I think where you would add mystery to your belief, I would just almost chalk the whole thing up to.
Right.
Let me see if I can wrap. First of all, what's the verse in Genesis?
Genesis 1:26-28.
Say that one.
Oh, that let's make man in our image after our likeness. And basically, I think where you're going is, let them rule over the earth.
Right.
Is that what you're talking about?
Right.
Yeah.
So basically—
have dominion.
And you asked two questions. One is the church praying like they should?
Right.
And then what was the other one?
What I would do is just take a simple— well, first of all, I'd ask this. Do you believe prayer makes a difference? Most people are going to say yes. Does the church pray like it ought to? No. Does God get everything he wants? Or is everything that happens God's will? So the point being, if prayer makes a difference, and again, I'm okay with to what degree, you know, whatever, but does it make a difference? Yes. Here's another way to say what I think you're reaching for, Joey.
And let me ask Roy real quick. Are you at a place to where you could say to that first question, does prayer make a difference, and it comes to interceding for someone else, are you comfortable with saying, I'm not sure?
No, I'm comfortable saying yes. I'm comfortable saying prayer does make it. I've seen prayer make a difference. It's just, it doesn't follow a pattern.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Again, we'll talk more about this as we get into it, but I wish we just knew to Chip's point, does the church pray enough? And obviously the answer to that is we think no,
but and how, you would agree with that.
I would agree with that, yeah. but how much is enough?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice to find out?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I wish. Yeah. Why could God not have just made? But why here, could God but here, not have just given yeah. this? Given well, us the.
I think there's an answer to that too.
Okay.
Though. Let me just say something about that. The opening thought there. None of us, I think, would say we think the church is as committed to prayer as it should be, and I mean the capital C church, individuals, congregations, whatever. So my point is this. Any thought we have, any book that's ever written, any sermon that's ever preached, is being preached, written, and it's, you know, that their theories being communicated from a perspective of insufficient information. We don't know what life would look like if we took God's invitation to prayer seriously. So that's probably one of the most important things I could ever say. We don't know. Number one, in Western culture, America in particular, we think individually. I pray a certain prayer and I wonder why the answer I prayed for doesn't happen. And then you say, oh, well, I got 10 other people to pray with me and whatever, whatever. But what if there's a much more communal dimension to faith? Like Jesus said, he couldn't do mighty works there because of their unbelief. What if he didn't mean their individual unbelief, but their community unbelief?
Yeah.
What if there was just a functional lean to the community that we just kind of don't think that happens anymore? And so the environment was not fertile.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said something earlier, Joey, in your comment about that from that moment of the motorcycle, and I do remember that whole situation, your whole sense of structure and whatever. And that's probably the most important way to understand my perspective. My perspective isn't down in the minutiae of Roy prayed this prayer and didn't get the answer. Mine's more, is there a way to understand prayer and the general principles that help cover as much ground as possible? Again, like you said, I fully acknowledge there's stuff, I call it file 13. I have a file that I'm like, God, can we talk about this when I get over there? Because there's stuff I'm just like, you know, God, I mean, I've buried a couple of friends that I thought from a pure warfare strategy perspective, I thought, God, I just don't understand why it was a good move to let this guy be taken out. I mean, this guy was rocking it and helping people like crazy. And I'm like, just didn't seem like a smart move. Mm-hmm. And so, I, you know, I've got questions.
Yeah. So Roy and I were talking, and I basically like, let's come up
with... Oh, so you had a talk before the talk.
We were emailing back and forth. We strategized.
We told you this was ganging up on the old guy.
But there's...
So y'all are buying lunch?
Depends on who wins this argument.
that's an established fact already.
So I want to break this down to three main reservations, and Roy agreed that most of the pushback would fall into these three categories. Instead of taking them one by one, because we may not, you know, take them one at a time, I'm just going to read all three of them. The first one is the type of fatherhood that you describe as far as people need to be praying so that God will act. Pray, God acts, correct? If we're not praying enough, then we need to question ourselves.
I'm not sure I would say it that tightly, but I do believe prayer is an integral part of God acting in the earth.
Okay. So maybe you would say this isn't the case, but I would say we would not see this type of fatherhood as a good thing, nor something to be celebrated here on earth. For example, hey kids, I love you. So imagine us saying this to our kids. Hey kids, I love you. I want to guide you. I want to be your parent and take care of you. But if you do not do your part, I've chosen that I won't do my part either. Like if any of us had that attitude towards our kids, nobody would be like, oh, well, that's a good dad.
But would a good dad say, son, I'm trying to prepare you to have a successful life. And so I want to teach you to be punctual. I want to teach you to follow through on your commitments. I want to teach you that there's certain habits and practices that if you do them consistently, will make you stronger, more resilient, blah, 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 blah. And then an incident comes up where, you know, you say to the kid, hey, do all your chores and Friday night, you and I are going to go out on a date night and go to a movie and whatever. So Friday afternoon rolls around and the kid's done half his chores. Is it wrong for that father to say, hey, I really would like to take you out to movie and dinner tonight, but I can't because you didn't do what I asked you to do?
Totally with you, but I think we're talking more along the lines of the big ones as far as someone dying.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Second one, what this practically turns out looking like on a day-to-day faith journey. So we just talked about this, but Roy and I have been, and you have too, Chip, we've been in situations where if prayer truly is the answer to get results, the one prayed for would have been healed because of the numerous prayer warriors and countless hours invested on this person's behalf. So the three of us have been in situations where lack of prayer wasn't the issue.
Right.
And it still seemed to have not worked. And then the last one is that the implications of this on one's faith, I feel, is horrendous. So imagine a parent mourning the death of a child. So does this parent also need to face the reality of not praying enough? What if they were angry at God because of the traffic accident, for example, and they didn't pray at all? Then the death seems to be definitely on them. And how can a person trust a God who would allow a child to die because of flawed humanity? Like God saying, your child died, but that's on you. And I'm like, God, you know how I am. I'm a human. I was emotionally basket case. Like I didn't have it in me.
Right.
You know, you're God, you're my father. I thought you cared about my child more. So it just seems like the implications lead to a very horrendous, maddening faith journey.
I think, again, I think it helps maybe to go back and just, we're talking about a very specific segment of prayer.
Which might be part of the problem, but go ahead.
Yeah, sure, sure, yeah. Sure. There are multiple purposes of prayer.
Right, absolutely.
And not discounting those purposes of prayer.
Right.
So we're talking about a very specific part of prayer.
Right.
Asking for God to move on our behalf in somebody's life, in our life, whatever. And why this is so important is because when we get this wrong, and so many people do, that's how we end up in faith crisis.
Right.
And that's where
And people get hurt. And
people, this is where people walk away from the church. Yeah. This is where people walk away from God because they believe something that just wasn't true.
Right.
It wasn't fair.
Right.
And it wasn't a fair expectation.
Right.
And so I'll admit that probably in many ways where I've come and landed on this is a safe place not to be disappointed.
Right. Yeah.
Self-protection, maybe. Maybe not healthy. You'd say probably not healthy, but I'm just saying, I think that's...
I think I've done the same thing in some ways, so I get it.
And you had a situation decades ago in which someone took their life and you felt like you had an encounter with God to where God maybe graciously said, that's partly on you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and you know, let's talk enough to where it doesn't sound as weird as it's going to sound. Yeah, you're probably talking 30 years ago. I was driving here in Charleston, so it might have been even longer, getting off on Cosgrove. I can still picture it. And I had the radio on, and they mentioned that, I don't know, chief of police or something had committed suicide. I didn't know. I didn't even know who he was. I didn't keep track of that kind of stuff. So I'm listening as I'm on the exit loop, you know. And I just felt this gentle little thought that I felt like came from God said, that was your fault. Now, I don't mean it as literally as that. Mm-hmm. I think God just nudges to get our attention. So I was like, okay, God, you know, in essence, like, whoa, dude, that's pretty heavy duty. What are you talking about? Like, basically, I said, God, you know, come on. I don't even know this guy. Never laid eyes on him. And I felt like God said this. If the church prayed like it should, people would live more in alignment with the pace and pressure would be different. And it would affect the entire feeling of a community, which would affect the pressure this gentleman lived under, which would have affected the life decisions that he made. So it wasn't God saying, if you'd prayed enough, you know, I would have knocked the gun out of his hand. It was more of an indirect. Does that make sense? Because that's the thing, like even with what Roy was saying a second ago, I don't know if I've always been able to, you know, feather it out a little bit like I do now. But I'm very reluctant to see anything as this that happened as a result of this one thing that just preceded it. I think everything's a little bit more complicated than that. Us sitting in this room, us being friends, us liking each other, there's thousands of things that contributed to Roy being the kind of person he is, you being the kind of person you are, me being the kind of person I am, to where we sink like we do, right? And so for me to use that experience, I didn't hear like God saying, you know, I'm holding you responsible for that man doing what he did. I heard God teasing my thinking and my learning that, wait a minute, if we pray, I may not be able to stop that accident from happening. But what if prayer makes me live a little kinder, a little more gently? Yeah. What if that makes me nicer to you and you to that one and you to that one? And what if the whole feeling of our community is different? I mean, let's just say right now, and I don't mean these numbers, but let's just say right now, 3% of the church prays like it should. Let's say we had a revival of some kind and it got up to 30. And what if the whole community just feels nicer?
Yeah.
And we're not in as much of a hurry, and we're not as greedy, and we're not as, you know. And I just think stuff that now happens, including some sicknesses, et cetera, but particularly interactive things between people, I just think, you know, prayer indirectly can have effects that we just you can't measure.
Yeah, it makes complete sense to me. In fact, it's funny. I feel like this morning I have a real-life example of what you're talking about. In that I've got to make it, I'm making a decision today that I've been thinking about over the last couple of days. And as I laid in bed this morning, like just woke up, I probably had
like
prayed,
10 a.m.
Probably 10 a.m. It was 9:45 this morning. I had to be here now. So I was like, as much thinking as I've done about this decision, as much as I've crunched numbers, I probably haven't prayed about this the whole life. Right. And then here was my thought of being honest. Here was my thought. I don't know that I want to know what God wants me to do on this, right? Like that's where you're talking about. It's the submission piece that when we come to God in prayer, it's a heart posture that forces us to submit our wills to God, therefore changing the way we live, speak, treat people, love people.
Absolutely.
All of the above. Therefore changing the world we live in, per se. Yeah.
Let's say initially it doesn't stop calamities from happening, horrible tragedies from happening. But what if it changes how we react to them, process them? Because I don't know if I ever was or ever came across that way, but I don't think I've ever been a person who said, if you or a loved one dies of an illness, you didn't have enough faith. Now, what I would say is, I'm not as quick to say that's what God wanted to happen. That's the big thing that I think I've become known for. I don't believe God is micromanaging reality. I don't believe it's correct theology to say, if this or that happens and somebody dies, that was God's will. I'm not okay with that. I'm just not.
I agree with you.
But I'm also not okay with, it's your fault. It's more complex than that. And I'm okay with complexity. This place is a complex place. I was thinking this when, I think it was you, Roy, who said earlier that we're talking about a specific element of prayer. But that's the danger of it. Because when it comes time to pray a prayer that's life and death, it's too late to learn about prayer. One of my dear friends, he was one of the two or three couples that helped start our church. I mean, this guy was a rock that was there for me in a thousand different ways. Also, a very difficult guy, but like we all are in different ways, you know? And he's a little hard-headed. He goes on a missions trip to Africa, and he contracts malaria. Well, guess what? The doctor told him before he left, if you take these pills 10 days ahead of time or something like that, you know, if you get malaria, much less blah, blah, blah. Well, he didn't do it. I'm big, strong. I don't need that. Or it might have even been faith. I don't know. Bottom line is he comes back, not feeling well, doesn't slow down, ends up going on another trip to Florida or somewhere. And he's got full-blown malaria. And I mean, he is one sick puppy. Well, they helicopter him from wherever he was to Miami so he could be in like a place that specializes in it. We get the call. You know, Doug's really sick. I believe, you know, kind of the stuff we're talking about. I grabbed my worship guy. It was a morning, a weekday. And I said, hey, let's get next door and pray. So we start to pray. As soon as we started to pray, I had this impression in my spirit. This is not going to end well.
Oh, yeah. I remember you telling me that.
This is not going to end well. Now, God, I think God, knowing what I'd been taught about healing and blah, 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 I think God was, because I have a relationship with God that's kind of a little bit two-way conversational, God spoke to me to say, he didn't explain to me why. He didn't say, you know, this was missed or that, or it's his fault or this. He just said, this is not going to end well. That's what happened. He ended up dying. But it gave me a different way to walk through it. And it made me attentive to, like, okay, God, I'm listening. I want to learn here. And I'm not saying I cracked the code or anything.
Yeah. Well, we grazed by this, and I want to go back to it. I agree that we can't look at everything that happens on this earth and say, that's God. And in fact, you've said it this way, like people who say, well, God's in control. Like, you don't want to serve that God if God is in control of everything. No. But the little child who was taken advantage of, God could have stopped it. So we all say real quickly, well, that's not God's will for that to have happened to the child, but he could have stopped it. To me, that's still problematic.
Well, let me ask you a question, Joey. To me, I mean, it's just how I think. I just think very logically. You're very, apparently now, and you can push back on this, you said that all, and you slid a statement in there that I think's not fair.
Yeah.
God could have stopped it. How?
God can do anything. God's really? All powerful.
Really?
I thought. Is God not omnipotent?
Yes, but has he not put rules, processes, and things? In other words, it's interesting that we think like that, that God can do anything he wants. But he's chosen not to.
Yeah, but well, then I may tell my...
Does it delete the fact that he's able to?
That's right.
He's able to. Like he's chosen not to.
That's what I'm saying.
He's chosen not to.
Right. So what I'm saying is...
That's to me, that's not, that doesn't make everything okay. So if my daughter goes to a place in town that I've told her, hey, do not go to that part of town, it's not good. And she calls me and says, I'm in that part of town, I'm so sorry, but I need your help. I'm getting in the car.
Right.
And I'm going to go straight there and I'm going to do everything I can to get her out of the situation.
Right.
That doesn't sound like how you say God works. It sounds like you're saying God would be like, well, I've put these things in place and it's your responsibility to do things a certain way. So if something bad happens, it's kind of on us.
Yeah, again, being careful with that, it's kind of on us. Like let's almost like put God out of the picture for a minute. How would God stop that? Like a kid's about to be abused. How would God stop that? Or how would it be stopped? Forget God for a minute. How would it be stopped?
Put some notion in the kid's head. Don't go into that room right now with that adult. Go get some candy in the kitchen and hang out with your mom and dad.
Strike the abuser dead.
Right.
I mean,
that's Roy's Enneagram 8 in mind.
Or give one of the parents an intuitive sense that this person's something's wrong here.
Yeah.
I mean, in other words, there's all these different ways it could happen. Would it be wrong to say prayer would probably increase the likelihood of those things happening? Like if I'm tuned into God because I have a really active prayer life, don't you think it's more likely I'd look at someone and say, something ain't right over there?
Yeah, but I want God to care deeply regardless of my prayers.
But what responsibility are you willing to take?
I don't know.
See, that's at the heart of the issue. Now, I agree. The way this conversation comes out sometimes, it makes it sound like there's way too much on our end.
Yeah.
My real point is, how much are we willing to take?
See, and sorry, I'm not trying to not answer that question. But again, the point of this was to kind of poke at these theories and poke holes.
Sure.
Poke holes. And one hole that I see in what you said, you said, in the idea that you're uncomfortable saying that was God when bad things happen. Yeah,
automatically, right.
But here's the flip side of that. We don't want, it tends to be the good and the bad things. In other words, when bad things happen, somebody like you wants to say, that's not God. But when good things happen, that person is miraculously healed, that person is, something comes up, then you do want to point and go, that's God. That's a flaw in that thinking to me.
I don't think the way you just described. I would go so far as to say this. I believe it's harder on God for the bad thing to happen than the miracle. It's easier for God to do the healing than it is to watch the death. I believe we underestimate what's at stake. And what's at stake is God entrusting us with something that we haven't been willing to accept. And that is, again, I don't know where the line goes. Like you guys have heard me, when I teach on boundaries, I talk about three things that run together and always in this order: responsibility, authority, and power. We want power without any responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
We want people that listen to God and God, people, forgive me for this sounding harsh. I'm just saying it to make a point. Because I don't mean it. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. We want to live paying attention to God 30 minutes a day. I'm just saying that, just to make a point. But then when crisis comes, we want him to, Johnny on the spot, do what we ask him to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's something just, what kind of father would reward that kind of behavior? Now, because what we want is, we want this sugar daddy that is going to jump when my kid needs him. But what about on our side? We talk about Christianity being a covenant. There's responsibilities on my side too. And again, please don't think I'm saying if bad stuff happens, it's your fault. That's not what I'm saying exactly. What I'm saying is, we don't know what this journey would look like if more of us were more consistently obedient, surrendered.
So I'm going to give a low blow here.
Let me go back because I don't think I clarified. Responsibility and authority, I believe it always goes in that order. So my first question is, God, what is my responsibility in this situation? And my responsibility is to trust him, pray, do whatever. We don't want any responsibility. When I hear someone say, well, bless the Lord, good things happen for a reason and God's in control, here's what I hear, and I don't want any responsibility. Zero. Now, it might only be 0.003, but don't you dare tell me it's zero. Don't dare tell me it's zero.
So your kids, your grandkids, there is nothing.
Be careful, Joey. Be careful, Joey.
Don't make this personal now.
There is.
Theology works as long as it's not personal, right?
There's nothing that would stop you from keeping them safe, not even their bad decisions. Like if it's a matter of their physical well-being, there is nothing that would stop Chip Judd from rescuing your kid or grandkid, and it doesn't matter what their bad decisions were. It doesn't matter if they have built up hostility towards you. You're still going to move the galaxy to keep them safe. So that's kind of just where I land.
But here's where here's the danger of that thinking, Joey. First of all, we're not in a zero sum situation. Like, you know, there's no consequences to my rescuing you. There are consequences to my rescuing that kid. Let's say the kid has historically made, kid or grandkid, has historically made bad decisions, and I've rescued them every time. That kid's going to make another one, and chances are the older they get, the further down the road they get, those mistakes get worse. But here's the deal. If I really love the kid, I want to rescue, and if you could see me, I'm putting quotes around it. I want to rescue them in a way that they learn something. Here's the thing. You don't change a behavior till it hurts less or hurts more to stay the way you are. I'll say that again. You don't change unless it hurts more to stay the way you are. So there's some things, again, not life and death issues, because obviously there's no learning after that. But there's some things that it's wrong to rescue. Now, I'm saying all that to say one side of it, that protecting isn't always protecting. The second side of it is this. We're not in peacetime. So there's an element of you're part of a cosmic war, and it matters which side you live on. There's times when I can't protect you from the consequences of the side you chose. Now, don't hear that if something awful happens, somebody's on the wrong side. That's not what I mean. Like, I've thought a lot about this stuff. It's kind of like soldiers. The three of us, we're a squad of soldiers, and we're going into a patch of thick jungle that the enemy's entrenched in. We go through, fire breaks out, we fight our way through. One of us doesn't come out the other side. Doesn't mean that one did anything wrong, didn't practice shooting enough. Bottom line is, I don't know why. You want to pick Joey? Joey didn't make it. Joey didn't make it through, but Roy and I did. Here's the deal. There's an element of mystery to it. I'm the dad of the three that went into that woods, guns and all, to fight their way through. While I'm preparing you for that, there's probably going to be some uncomfortable moments where I have to stress to you, there are decisions you make that have life and death consequences. And I just think we don't take seriously enough what we're in the middle of. And so there's times when we get squeamish because, oh, well, why didn't God stop that? And there's some things, hey, I get it. You know, what you referred to earlier, Joey, is if God's okay with everything going on, meaning like he's in control, I don't want to go to heaven. If God doesn't have...
Why?
Because he's sick.
Why? What do you mean? But
Right now, this second, on this planet, there are children and women being treated in ways. And here's the thing. We all would agree God's omnipresent.
Yep.
He's there watching that. Don't tell me doesn't break his heart. And then somebody out there, forgive me, who's just ignorant of spiritual realities is like, well, he could stop it anytime he wants. No, he can't. Now, can in the sense of ability, but he can't to honor the script of the creation we're in. And that's part of the issue. Part of the issue why we don't understand this stuff is we have a self-serving narrative.
That it breaks down in so many places, Chip. It breaks down so much.
It doesn't for me, so explain.
Okay, so let's take your example for a second.
Okay.
If I'm aware that next door to me is a situation where kids are being abused in this home.
Right.
Am I to pray for that situation?
Pray and do something about it.
Okay.
Use the proper chain of command authority to do something about it.
I don't disagree with you. So what I would say, what I would go back to is, then what's the point of praying?
Well, the point of praying is inviting. Prayer is kind of like calling the police.
Because I'm asking God to intervene.
Right.
And you just said... I wish we could play it back. Can you edit this?
Well, I know where you're going. I just said he can't. I don't think it's that he can't at all, but we act like he can anywhere he wants to. Joey brought up the beginning of the broadcast, Genesis 1:26-28. Let us make man in our image and likeness, multiply, replenish, fill the earth, and have dominion. I believe God's plan is this. I want to rule earth from heaven through mankind. Now, for me, that's the key to this whole conversation. I want to manage, I prefer that word, I want to manage the affairs of earth through humanity, redeemed, yielded, surrendered humanity who have recognized their horrible need and how capable of evil they are. They've reached out to me and asked for my help, and they live asking for my help every day, every breath. And then those people bring God and his will and wishes into moments, big and small. 1 John 5:19, the whole earth lies in the power of the evil one. What is that? Well, the whole earth lies in the power of independent, unyielded, unsurrendered humanity. And God set this thing in motion. For me, here's how my brain works. What was the initial plan? I want to build a race of people that love me. I want to build a race of people that have a love relationship with me. The only way that can happen is if they have the choice not to. So here's the deal. There's going to be consequences when they choose not to, and it's going to get ugly. And that's what we're living in. We're living in that in-between where we share this planet with a majority of people who have chosen not to have anything intentional to do with God. And then there's those of us that have begun relationship with God and are seeking to live our lives in a way that pleases him and bring him into situations on the earth. Well, we're in the minority, for one thing. Number two, I don't know that we're doing such a great job teaching people the narrative I just described. So we live with this almost que sera thing. Well, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And my deal is just, you know, stay over here in my corner loving Jesus. When I think about horrible things happening, I start there and work my way upward. Like Ephesians talks about, we wrestle not with flesh and blood, but principalities and powers. I think you'd all agree, you could probably take a lot of humanity's ills and boil it down to greed. In other words, we just, whatever we have, we want more. Mm-hmm. I think a proper walk with God would eradicate greed.
I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying,
right.
But let's get back to the scene. We're at the hospital.
Right.
Someone's sick.
Right.
Someone's dying.
Right.
Why are we praying? What are we praying for? What are we expecting God to do in that moment?
All right. My first instinct would be to listen, not declare. Like, I believe you can't pray a prayer of faith until you know what God's will is. You know, 1 John 5:14-15, if we know he hears us, we have the petitions we've asked, you know. Now, the problem with that is we don't typically do that. We just, like, it's God's will to heal. Let's pray for healing. Not having any other information available to me, I'll happily pray for someone's healing. But what I want to do is listen.
Which again, going back to the idea that faith crisis, which is the theology that a lot of people are walking around with.
Right.
That it's God's will to heal. I know people who have many faith crises have come because their theology was
right.
God is in the business of healing those
right.
who love him,
right.
called according to his purpose.
Right.
Curious how you would answer this, Roy. If we're talking about an all-powerful God, when he says God can't, but then he says also, I mean, God can do whatever he wants, but in this situation, I hear it as God won't. And so, I think yeah, that's the yeah, big yeah. question is why.
We try to boil these down to some finite,
right?
And they don't work all the time. But here's what I hear him saying. Here's the parent example I hear him saying. As a parent to a son, Joey, I'm telling you not to do blank. And if you do it, don't call me.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't call me to come bail you out. Don't call me. I'm telling you right now, Joey, I'm not coming. I'm not, you know, like, you're on your, if you choose to do this, you're on your own. And then it's as if, as a parent, I watch you make that mistake, and I continue to go. I said I wasn't going to, like, I know he might die right now, but I said I wasn't going to intervene. I told him if he went that road. And I think what you and I are saying is, we would feel like the nature of God is to be like, yeah, I'm going to save him right now. Or the heart of a father
right.
would be like, well, yeah, I'm going to save him right now. Of course, I'm going to save his life.
Yeah. And to make matters—
even though he's making a bad decision, even though it's his fault, because right. I told him not to do that. But who would I be as a father to sit on the sidelines and go, dude, these are the consequences. I told you not to do that.
Right.
And I told you I wasn't going to intervene and help you.
Especially when you think of a three-year-old. Think of one of your kids as a three-year-old when you said, you know, I don't want you running in the parking lot. And they run and take off and you're just like, well, we'll see what happens. And I think
he's going to learn.
I think he's going to learn. The intellectual chasm between God and humanity is infinitely more vast than between you and one of your kids when they were three.
So, I mean, obviously I don't believe the directness of what you guys just said there. But let me ask you a question. The three-year-old runs out in the parking lot, gets hit by a car and dies. Are you comfortable saying that was God's will?
I'm going to be honest with you. I am. I've come to a place in my life, again, I can't do what you're suggesting. I can't remove all responsibility from God for the bad thing, the quote unquote bad things that happen, and at the same point in time, give him credit for all of the good things that happen. I have to take both of them. And the only way I can do that is to believe that I'll never understand why God chose to allow that to happen. I'll never understand why God didn't stop that truck, didn't grab that child, didn't cause that child to trip. I can't explain why God allowed that to happen.
Right.
But I have to choose to believe that his ways are higher than my ways, that he knows things that I don't know, that it's not my job to answer the why.
Yeah, I would answer your question by saying I have no freaking idea. That's my answer.
Well, I mean, honestly, Joey, I would be more comfortable with that answer than that one. I can no longer be okay. The way I'm going to say this is a result of all the conversation I've had over the years. No matter how you say it, God's in control, God allowed it, God whatever. In some manner, shape, or form, what you're saying is God sitting at his desk, you know, CEO of the universe, and the request came across his desk to allow this three-year-old to be hit by a truck and die. And somehow you believe God said approved and allowed it to go on. And I'm just, I can't do it. So now the point is, I'm not saying it gets easy after that, but I'm just not okay with that.
But you are okay with God's watching the scene in the hospital. He's watching these people pour out their hearts, begging for their friend's life to be saved.
Right.
And he said, not going to answer that one today. No.
Well, I don't
put
see.
A stamp on no.
But I don't see that. That's what I mean. I don't see that whole desk thing happening. I don't see God getting the request and deciding yes or no.
But I think you do when the answer is yes, though.
Explain that. Given it, for instance, of that.
Because
I don't think I do.
Again, if that situation that Joey referenced earlier, if that situation turns out differently, everybody's leaving that hospital praising God for his miracle.
Yeah, because the guy got healed.
Because he saved, because God saved him. God healed him.
Right.
And you, I know in your Pentecostal charismatic days have prayed and believed for God to do miracles on the spot and have watched him do it and have... And would
more
absolutely give him credit that he stamped yes that time.
Yeah, but I don't not give credit to the people that showed up to pray and all that went into it. Yeah. And in other words, it's not. I'm still not following your point. I would apply the same percentages. Meaning, the bad thing, we have a very small percentage of responsibility. The good thing, we have a very small percentage of responsibility. But we do have some.
So it may not be. I know how you articulated this. You said, I'm not okay with God stamping yes on a kid running out in the parking lot getting hit by a truck, but you are okay with God saying yes to, here's how I'm laying out how things work. This is my will. And so part of that would be bad things happening on God's watch. And I think any other perspective along those reins would have to start teetering on God being limited in power, which I don't think any one of us is willing to go there.
I don't think God's limited in power in any other way than self-limitation.
And I would, and I think that's the sticking point for Roy and I is
All right, let me
when
ask
it
you,
comes to the safety of our kids, we are not going to limit our power. You're not either. you're going to do everything in your power when it comes to life or death.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But we're not God. We're not responsible for the integrity of the entire universe. We can operate with an absence of integrity in a moment to save a kid. It doesn't break anything.
Yeah.
It does if he operates with a lack of integrity.
Yeah.
There are some things God can't do. Not because he can't.
Not an inability.
Doesn't have the absence of power. He has chosen to give you that sliver of responsibility called free will. Obviously, it breaks down when you talk about a three-year-old running in front, parking lot. And forget anybody out there who's ever lost a three-year-old, by the way.
Especially in a parking lot.
Yeah, really. Hopefully, there's nobody listening. That's yeah. going to trigger. And there's a breakdown there, but it's like we play by different rules in different areas. If salvation is that contingent upon a decision a human being makes, and we all agree in prevenient grace, you know, God seeks you, which is why you seek him and all that. But we all would, I think, agree there is a moment where you make a decision.
Yeah.
And I think we all agree God is not going to violate your will. That's really kind of all I'm saying. That what are the consequences of that multiplied by 7 billion people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, there are things that are going to happen that God would like to have not happened, but they're based on decisions that he has chosen. He could stop, change, avert, whatever, but he's set this whole thing up by a set of rules and principles, laws and procedures. And because of his own integrity, I believe, he cannot violate them. That's kind of my bottom line.
Wouldn't some say, and would you say... I mean, that borderlines on the watchmaker.
It's called deism.
Yeah.
I thought about that because I thought, I don't want to sound like a deist, but I probably do some.
Yeah.
But here's the difference between me and a deist. God will come into any situation we invite him into. But we have this idea that we can ignore him forever for 50 years. When we're in crisis, we invite him in and he's supposed to fix everything. And that's just not fair. So I'm not a deist. But I do believe God did the scariest thing he ever could have done. And that is give us the ability to make choices that have consequences. And that's at the core of everything I'm saying. You can't make choices contrary to what God wants. And I don't mean this is like a tit for tat punishment thing, but you can't live misaligned with God's principles and practices and then think you're going to pray one prayer and he's going to clean it all up.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way. Go back to the child being abused. I think you get into governmental responsibility, family responsibility, international responsibility. And when you take that thought and say, how many of us in positions where we affect the lives of thousands are not living yielded, surrendered lives to God? And then we want to explain why crazy stuff happens.
I still don't know that we've answered the hospital room scenario. Yeah, and you started, I know you started to say something where first, you said, I first want to know the will of, I want to know the will of God.
All right, I come in the hospital room and you're praying with a loved one. I may say, hey, let's join hands and pray. And we pray scripture is what I would do. I'd pray scripture. But I'm almost always going to pray this prayer, which is my favorite. And you guys probably will get it as soon as I say it. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. And all I'm really saying is, God, whatever you can do in this situation, please do it. And again, I don't mean can, like he has a limitation of power, but whatever your integrity will allow you to do, please have at it. And the family may not even catch that, thy kingdom come part. And then I'll usually pray, and God, help this family deal with whatever the outcome is, whatever. Mm-hmm. Here's a theological question for you. Jesus, Hebrews 13:8, Jesus the same yesterday, today, and forever, right? Can you find one place in the Gospels anyone came to Jesus for healing and he said no?
No.
That's why Pentecostals believe what they believe. I mean, that's not a bad argument.
But that's not our experience.
I know it. I agree.
Why doesn't that line, then why, it's so why?
I'm not saying.
Why is that not our experience?
Dude, if I could solve that one. But here's the point now. Now think about this for a minute.
Write a book, you become and a millionaire.
All right, here's, again, I'm just picking back. So we look at that and we say, okay, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I have not found anybody yet who can find an example of someone making their way to Jesus saying, will you heal me in some manner, shape, or form, and him not doing it. And then you say, oh, but our experience now, blah, blah, blah. Okay, then why are we so confident when any Tom, Dick, and Harry prays the sinner's prayer? We're done. We throw them in the water, pull them up. And we say, you are now a born again, bona fide Christian based on the same scriptures that promise healing. All I'm saying is if we're going to apply the rules one way, we got to apply them the other. Now, here's a thought. Is it possible that everybody that prays that prayer isn't saved?
Yeah.
And by the way, ultimately, we're all going to be healed.
Before we end, yes. I want to make sure that my position on prayer is heard before before like whatever. Here's where I've landed.
What?
I know scripture calls us to pray.
Right.
I know that I'm not talking about the lining up with God's my heart lining up. There's that, but I'm talking about the praying for healing, praying for the miraculous. I know God calls us to pray. I don't know from there. That's the truth. Mm-hmm. I wish there was a formula for it. I think that's the frustrating part, right? I wish we knew how many times it took for a prayer to be answered. I wish we knew why, you know, I wish I knew why one did and what didn't, because I pray differently. I pray the way I did, you know, pray right. for the, you know, whatever. So I know God calls me to pray. I haven't sworn off prayer. I haven't given up on prayer. But at the same point in time, I just...
All right, let me ask you a question, both of you guys. You've got a church that we all admit, I don't know anybody I've ever talked to that would think and say confidently the church prays. I mean, the church is prayer monsters. They get it. No one would say that. So our solution is that we question something we've never fully tried. Mm. Take the what a good father wants to do with his child, which is to impart the responsibilities that will make their life successful. So is there a possible element where God is like, you guys have no idea what I would like to do on earth, but your lack of prayer makes it impossible? Impossible's probably not a comfortable word for some people. I think we'd all agree with this. Around Jesus, things happen on earth the way they would in heaven. He prayed like crazy. He lived, yielded, and surrendered. I know he's Jesus, but here's the interesting thing.
I know he's God,
but he's inside of us.
Yeah,
I do think we interpret scripture from reality, not reality from scripture.
Yes.
Do you think Roy and I are hard-headed and dumb?
No, not at all. But I do think we operate from a science-dominated Western mindset that has a very hard time with the supernatural, and I'm including myself in that. I have challenges that haven't landed where my belief in scripture would have them land yet. And I'll be honest, in a funny sort of way, gosh, don't let my wife hear this. I don't care in this sense. I want Jesus to be represented well in the earth. And whatever it takes for us to figure it out, learn, I just want us to get it. And I feel like prayer, I feel like the enemy's who dude us.
You still confused, Roy, just in general on prayer?
I feel like we should take a vote as to who makes the most sense, me or Joey or Chip.
Oh, my gosh.
So let's take a vote. Who thinks me or Joey?
There's no hands raised right now.
Who thinks Chip?
Wait, there's five two hands. To one. There's five hands raised.
It's a miracle.
God raised his hand.
There's images of hands all in this place. There's like the writing on the wall.
There's hands up on top of each of our heads.
And oh, my gosh, Roy's got fire on his head.
And it's in the shape of a hand.
Love you guys.
Just a reminder, next week, Thomas J. Ord introduces us to a theological framework referred to as open theism. Given at its core is a belief that God is limited in power, not only do most Christians not hold this view, many have never even heard of it. If you enjoy these episodes, we'd love for you to leave us a rating and maybe even a comment. We've loved the comments that have come in so far. There's a link in the show notes to our podcast Facebook group where we talk about these episodes and share some behind-the-scenes information, including some guests we're booking. Hey, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode.